Well, time for the final installment of our week-long focus on the deal makers, the corporate financiers and the private equiteers and businesses that really keep the economy ticking over. And so far, we've unpacked M&A in South Africa year to date, and work has certainly been flowing, and deals to tap new growth markets in Europe are a dominant theme. We've spoken about general corporate finance transactions, listings and capital raisings and the like. It's an area that has held up well despite the low growth economy, once again de-linking Main Street from Gwen Lane, and some big deals have skewed the numbers over there, South32's unbundling and then listing in particular. And then last night we explored the drivers of activity in Africa on the listed side as major listed companies, the likes of your Sunlums, your PPCs, Growth Points, SAB Millers, as we heard today, your Nampacs, to name a few, have made massive continental strides recently. It's been all about the deal makers on the Classic Business panels this week on 102.7 FM. Tonight we're going off the listed track, so to speak, into the world of private equity and venture capital, and I've assembled a formidable panel for the discussion, starting off with the CEO of SAFCA, the South African Private Equity and Venture Capital Association of South Africa, Erica van der Merwe. Erica, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Michael. Super being here.
And also on the line, we have Michael Rudnicki, Head of Private Equity at KPMG. Michael, welcome. You've recently taken over from Warren Watkins.
I have indeed. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show.
And also John Bellew, a doyen in private equity circles in South Africa, who now heads up Bowman Gill Fillon's private equity practice. John, thanks so much for making the time.
It's a pleasure, Michael.
Now, private equity by its very nature is hard to track, and we, through Catalyst and Dealmakers, we try our best to track some of the activity because deals aren't always announced publicly and certain values are rarely disclosed. But what we have tracked at Catalyst so far is roughly 45 deals in Africa in the first three quarters to go along with 26 here in South Africa. Erica, those seem to indicate healthy deal flow numbers.
Indeed, and I think that one could also point out that it's the outcome or the outflow of the very active fundraising that's been done for Southern Africa as well as for Sub-Saharan Africa. If we look at some of the numbers that the Emerging Markets Private Equity Association, for instance, have collected, they showed that during 2014, $4.4 billion was raised for Sub-Saharan African private equity. By mid-year 2015, that was a figure of $2.7 billion. So if you annualize that, you could argue that we could have an even more successful fundraising year in 2015. So one would expect that the funds raised in this manner then would be deployed, and hence the uptick in activity.
And Michael, we discussed on Monday evening, we touched on a theme that we've seen an increase in outbound M&A by South African companies who are chasing global diversification, and really because of the low growth here in South Africa. Is this feeding through to increases in African deal activity by South African firms or funds looking for growth north of the Limpopo?
From a South African perspective, in terms of private equity, Africa, north of South Africa, is very much a playing field from a South African point of view in terms of private equity. We know that inflation and certainly growth potential north of the borders is significantly higher than it is in South Africa. And what we're also finding is a number of the foreign investors are looking to invest into South Africa with expansion opportunities into Africa, i.e., again, north of the border. So I'm very excited in terms of what's going to happen in the coming months and years in terms of an expansion outside of South Africa into Africa itself.
John, would you go along with that? Because we in continental terms, we probably have quite a mature private equity here in South Africa, though globally we probably do lag markets like Israel and those very well-developed private equity markets. But in continental terms, which are the regions that are starting to play catch-up with South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, Michael. I think that you need to almost de-link South Africa from the rest of Africa when you talk about developed private equity markets. The South African market has been strong since the early 90s, really, and we're only starting to see the rest of Africa catching up probably in the last 5 to 6 years. And I think that, East Africa is definitely thriving at the moment. The feedback we get is that there are lots of new fund managers entering the market both in East Africa and in West Africa. And certainly if we look at the deal flow that we see, both East Africa, particularly, you know, Kenya, Ethiopia, Zambia, I guess, and on the west, Nigeria, Ghana, probably to the most large extent, are definitely hotbeds of deal activity and of fundraising.
And when one looks at those particular markets, is there a particular deal size that is standing out for you at the moment? We know that perhaps the mega deals in Africa are few and far between. What's the layer underneath, the kind of mid-cap layer looking like?
I think the mid-cap layer is looking very healthy. I think a lot of the businesses that private equity transactors seek out in the rest of Africa are by their nature family-owned businesses. They're looking for growth capital, or they're looking for, you know, a successor to take over from the existing family member. And I think that if you're a private equity player, obviously your preference is to source your own deals rather than to play in auctions where your chance of deal execution is less. And a lot of the deals that we are seeing are indeed family businesses.
That's very interesting. When we look at sectors, Erica, infrastructure is traditionally a strong one in Africa purely because of the need for things like power and roads and ports and harbors and the thing. What are the other sectors that are heating up a little bit right now?
Michael, what we've seen amongst our members and also the rest of Africa private equity funds is a particular appetite in any business that gives the fund an exposure to the emerging consumer, so the developing middle class. So that could range anywhere from a financial sector type deal to directly a retail, consumer retail business, all the way through to ICT, media, etc., and manufacturing as well.
Very interesting that the African consumer is something that comes up time and time again. And I say this because we had the Credit Suisse Global Wealth Report published recently, and it cast fresh light on the numbers of middle-class Africans. I know the African Development Bank at one stage reckoned it to be around 300 million. According to Credit Suisse, it's probably closer to 18 to 20 million. Michael, does this raise a concern for companies going into Africa on the back of data or expectations that perhaps might prove to be false?
The market is increasing. The wealth of individuals and as John mentioned, family-owned businesses is increasing, and that is just a good sign for private equity funds and investors. You want the wealth to increase. You want the countries to spend and develop. If I can add to what Erica said, particularly in this type of environment where there is an increase in wealth and increased requirements for a deployment of capital, the healthcare and education sectors are critical, critically in need of funding, and that's where private equity has shown an interest in recent months. But it certainly doesn't put a dampener, in my opinion, in terms of what we've seen in the market on the appetite for private equity players.
And talk to me, John, about valuations, because I think it was at the SAVCA conference down at Spear earlier this year that Ethos founder Andre Roux said he'd never have done deals at the sort of double-digit multiples that are becoming somewhat the norm now. What are you witnessing from a deal pricing perspective?
Yeah, look, I think at the beginning of the year there was a lot of talk about double-digit multiples. That hasn't followed through into deal activity in my experience this year. And I think certainly in the rest of Africa, you know, unless you're in a really intensely competitive auction process, I don't think that's the kind of multiple that private equity players will be looking to pay. You know, at the end of the day, if you're a private equity fund, you make your money to some extent by buying low and selling high. So, you know, the trick is to find your own deals that no one else is competing for and to execute those transactions at a favorable price.
And I have heard there's a lot of capital chasing limited sort of deal flow. We've seen the likes of your major players, your KKRs and the like, coming to Africa. Is this perhaps driving up multiples at all?
I'm actually chairing a panel next week at the Super Returns Conference in Ghana, where we're going to try and unpack this whole issue of whether or not there is a wall of capital that is flooding into Africa.
Mm.
And effectively, you know, I think there's a view that perhaps there's even too much capital for private equity in Africa. And, you know, doing preparation with my fellow panelists, I got very strong pushback against that view. You know, the feedback unanimously from all four of them was that they are finding deals, they are deploying their capital quickly, and, you know, there is no shortage of deals and there certainly isn't too much money, certainly in the mid-market space.
That's very interesting because, Erica, you'll recall I actually had this conversation with you a while back. It was based on research that I had seen from a UK-based think tank called the Overseas Development Institute. And it was suspicious that perhaps a bubble might be forming in sub-Saharan African private equity in particular. And listening to what John's saying, is that that's certainly not the case? And I know that's a view you probably share.
Indeed, and I think maybe touching on points that both John and Michael have raised. So, you know, the different tiers of deal making, you've got at the very large end of the scale, it is certainly a very competitive market. You've got South African players, you've got West Africa, East African players, and international players looking for those big ticket items. So, those would be at fairly appealing, attractive multiples to the seller. I think if you're looking sort of tier one or two tiers down below that, where smaller businesses far less in the public eye, I find less of a competitive process. If you've got family businesses looking for an exit, so I think there, where with use of proprietary relationships and local networks in sourcing those deals, I think the deal makers are finding plenty of deals at that level.
Very interesting, Michael. And when we also look at that particular report by the Overseas Development Institute, one of the things to come through was that perhaps PE funds might be starting to look at smaller scale businesses employing a build not buy sort of strategy. Would you go along with that?
I would certainly go along with that, and certainly in terms of price multiples, you would typically see the higher multiples on let's call it a mega deal, but certainly from a South African perspective, 100 million rand deals and around that range, you're probably looking at a lot lower, certainly single-digit multiples in terms of pricing, and especially if the opportunity is to build north of South Africa. To me, that's a critical recipe to certainly talking to a number of our international private equity houses, as clients you've mentioned, KKR, for example, where there's that spin-off in terms of build up into Africa, that is something certainly one would look at and they would look at, and the multiples seem to be better in terms of those type of businesses.
Very interesting indeed. We just need to take a quick break from this Dealmakers panel discussion where we're looking at private equity, and when we return, perhaps we can tease out some lessons, John, that you've certainly learned on your travels across Africa doing deals in the private equity space. You're listening to Classic Business. Well, as we enter the last little section of our final Dealmakers panel looking at private equity trends in Africa, John, I said we'd look at some lessons perhaps that you've learned from doing deals in Africa. I mean, what are some of the key kind of golden rules? I mean, the obvious ones obviously are do your due diligence, as we've seen so many listed companies run into issues in Nigeria, for example. But what else?
Yeah, I think there are a few golden rules, and I think that some of them are particularly apposite in the African context. Due diligence is obviously critical, but I think in Africa you've got an extra layer of making sure that you've really diligenced the business partners that you're going to invest in. And I think that, you know, you need to be careful about that. It's important to find the right people, and that implies that you need to have on-the-ground presence in the countries where you're doing deals, people with networks, people with connections who can actually steer you in the right direction and, you know, tell you who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. So I think that's the first thing. I think the second is that every African country is different. One shouldn't look at the continent as being the same all over. You need to have good local advisors to assist you, you know, with local law issues. And then I think you need to be very careful about structuring your deal in a way that enables you really to mitigate your risk to the largest extent possible. So where we do deals in Africa, we may structure them quite differently from the way in which we would structure a deal in South Africa. We would tend to use a lot more convertible instruments to retain the debt-like character, which, you know, enables you to extract your money more quickly. And we would often rather invest through an intermediate vehicle in a jurisdiction where, you know, we are comfortable about both the stability of the jurisdiction and the enforceability of contracts.
Very important points, those, particularly on the deal structuring side. As I was chatting to NAMPAC CEO Andre De Reiter earlier on, some capital was locked up in the Angolan and Nigerian operations for a while. So it's very important to be mindful of those sorts of issues. And I guess, John, it's also about de-risking entry.
Yeah, so, you know, at the end of the day, if you're going to invest in Africa, you have to accept Africa risk. You know, you can't get away from that. So really what you're trying to do is you're trying to mitigate that risk, and you do that through thorough due diligence, through careful structuring, and by having the right partner.
And understanding the regulators and what happens with those relationships is very important. Michael, when it comes to sourcing deal flow in Africa, where are deals sourced? I mean, if you're looking at family-owned businesses, I mean, those networks are absolutely critical, aren't they?
It's a very good question, Michael, because if you don't have the networks and the relationships within those countries, you're not going to find the opportunities. And that's why it's important to work with people on the ground. It's important to find advisors on the ground that are familiar with opportunities in those countries and also familiar with regulations and tax rules in those countries, because otherwise one will struggle. You have to have the guys on the ground that you can trust, and those are the people that would look for opportunities and these family businesses that you spoke about.
When we look at predictions now, we're in the fourth quarter, well into it, and in fact, I had invited Natalie Colby of Actis onto the panel tonight as well, but they announced a deal which explains why she couldn't participate. So clearly, deal activity it remains high at the very top end. I know the team over at Ethos are probably not getting much sleep at all. They're in a bit of a purple patch at the moment. Erica, what are your predictions for fourth quarter and then beyond into 2016?
I absolutely agree with you, Michael. Just anecdotally, just seeing what our members are up to, no one's mentioning any names, but a few of those houses that you mentioned, as well as some of the others, are very busy with trying to finalize some deals before year end. So I think the fourth quarter numbers would look quite attractive. And also I think during the course of 2016, we'll see further deal announcements. And then at the other end of the M&A scale for private equities, the exits, so the realizations from the funds. As you know, private equity is a fixed investment horizon. The funds have a 10-year life. So we're seeing those announcements, the exit announcements also picking up. And it was a theme for 2014. It's likely to be an important theme this year as well as for next year.
And we hope that equity markets, if you're going the IPO route rather than a business trade sale, hold up in the face of that, because we have had, John, an IPO window that's been fairly wide open, but that seems to be narrowing somewhat.
Yeah, I think that's fair comment. I think the IPO market has been attractive. Although I think we've seen good deal activity this year, you know, to my mind, when you look at the amount of capital that's been raised since about 2010, I guess, enormous amounts of money, and we haven't seen a commensurate uptick in deal flow. You know, it's been better in 2015, but I still don't think it's at the levels that we would expect. And I think general economic conditions are partly to blame for that. But certainly we are seeing a lot of our clients, particularly in the African market, starting to question whether the private equity model is in fact the right one. You know, raising capital through the private equity markets is time-consuming and difficult. And I think the hold period for transactions in a lot of African countries perhaps doesn't lend itself as well to the private equity model as it may do in the developed world. And we are getting a lot of interest about people wanting to kind of have open-ended or more permanent vehicles that take the pressure of fundraising and take the pressure off having to exit good transactions too early in their cycle.
More an investment holding company type model?
Similar to that, yes.
Well, that's very interesting indeed. Why do we have to end the panel on probably one of the most interesting points when we've got barely any more time to unpack that? Michael, I'll give you the last comment in response to what John has been saying about perhaps the model not being perfect for Africa.
I think that's correct, certainly in terms of fundraise within the continent, but we see an enormous amount of appetite from South African private equity funds. There's over 50-odd billion rands worth of undrawn commitments in South Africa which needs to be invested, and a lot of that is earmarked for Africa. And then also the international players are very interested in putting funds into South Africa and into Africa in particular. So there's a play as far as that is concerned, perhaps more restricted on internal funding within the continent, but I'm certainly very excited about the future.
Well, it is an exciting sector, no doubt about it, and certainly one, judging by tonight's panel, that is going to continue well into the new year. My thanks to all the panelists tonight. Michael Rudnicki, Head of Private Equity at KPMG, CEO of Savka, Erica Fundamava, and John Bellew, who heads up Bowman Gilfillan's private equity practice. It's been a really interesting window into the world of deal-making and M&A on the panels this week. I hope you enjoyed it. From me, Michael, producer Amor Khlakhla, and sound engineer Mdu Tnele, thanks so much for tuning in, and have a wonderful evening.